Economy in Our Schoolwork, 1903. I am perplexed in regard to our schools in America. During the night, matters were presented to me that I find hard to give expression to. We seemed to be in a conference meeting, and I was speaking to those who were assembled there in regard to the lack of faith and unity among the workers, and of the need of a decided efforts being made to clear our schools from their indebtedness. Brethren, I said, do not talk discouragement. Talk faith. Pray in faith, and work in the faith and love of Christ. We have in our ranks men of capability, but the work does not move forward as it should. The reason is that self-interests are being woven into the work. Some are selfishly seeking the first place and refuse to take counsel and advice. One worker pulls in one direction and one in another, each striving to carry out his own ideas and plans. Brethren, cannot you see that you are not working to advantage? Pull together in even cords, and you will see the salvation of God. The indebtedness that now rests on our schools in Battle Creek and Healdsburg need never have existed if the men who were placed as sentinels to guard the interests of the schools had watched expenses. A determined effort was not made to stop the leaks. When it was found that the tuition charged was insufficient to meet the expenses, it was the duty of these men to report the matter and to take the stand that they would not undertake to manage the schools unless sufficient means was provided to avoid debt. When I was in Europe, this indebtedness was presented to me as something that should not exist among us as a people. I was shown that the fee for tuition was placed too low from the first, and that teachers and students should come to the self-sacrificing conclusion to bear the indebtedness among themselves. The faculty should come out plainly and state that the charge for tuition had been too low, and that from the first, students had not been charged sufficient to meet the running expenses. I was shown that it would be far better to clear off the indebtedness now by a self-sacrificing effort than to have it continue to gather to oppress the faculty and discourage the work. Many of the students were able to pay more and not suffer at all in doing so. The faculty should take its stand and say, "We cannot run the school on its present income. We shall resign our position unless arrangements can be made whereby we can run the school without accumulating a debt." The bill of fare provided for the students has not been in proportion with the charges made. If in the preparation of the food strict economy had been practiced, a good round sum could be cut off the present indebtedness. And this fare has not always been the best for the students. It has often resulted in clouding the mind and injuring the health. We need to make reforms in this line. It is a mistake to provide a great variety of dishes. A plain, simple diet, free from flesh foods and largely free from liquid foods, is the best diet for students. When manual labor is combined with mental work, an appetite is created, and there is no need for the dainty dishes and variety of desserts that have had a place on our school tables, and which, instead of being a blessing, are often an injury. When the close of 1 year's experience in school management shows a large indebtedness, that 1 year should be enough to teach wisdom, so that it need never have to be met again. The next year should be one of retrenchment, of a binding about of the wants of teachers and students. In every department, investigation should be made and strict economy practiced. There are ways to be devised. Call a halt till some plan can be laid by which you can run the school free from debt. Have fewer teachers on the faculty and give the older students opportunity to teach classes. The experience they gain in communicating what they have learned will be invaluable to them, for it will fasten the lessons firmly in their minds. And while doing this, they will be learning how to conduct the work along lines of economy. It is not wise to allow debts to accumulate year after year. And the principle is wrong. The Lord does not want the education of the youth to involve the conference in debt. It has enough burdens and responsibilities to carry without taking on the school financial problem. One of the hardest battles we had to fight in the commencement of our schoolwork in Australia was the influence of extravagant expenditure of means. Some who were connected with the school felt that they must pattern after the schools in America. One night in vision, I was taken to a merchandise store where some of the brethren and sisters were buying for the school. Linen for the table was being examined, and the best quality was selected for purchase. I followed them to the furniture department, where again the best goods were chosen for the school furnishings. Then in my dream, I called them together and said, "Let us talk this matter over." I told them that the means we had in hand with which to make a beginning was very small, and referred them to the warning of Christ in the parable of the man who started to build a tower but was not able to finish. I was living at that time at Preston, a suburb several miles out of Melbourne. As soon as I was able, I sent to North Fitzroy a letter containing directions concerning the purchases for the school. I found that the goods had been selected, but not bought. Elder Daniels was very grateful for the instruction. The articles selected were changed for more common ones, and economy was practiced in all their purchases. Thus, quite a large sum was saved. One argument we had to meet often was that we should pattern after our schools in America. When any new plans were suggested, we were met with the objection, "Battle Creek does this," or "Battle Creek has that." I told the brethren that the Lord had shown me that we were not to imitate the schools in Battle Creek. That which was done in Battle Creek could not possibly be done in Melbourne. In Battle Creek, the work was suffering under a heavy load of debt because the workers there had followed a course of self-indulgence rather than a course of self-denial. In Australia, the work must be carried forward in a simple manner. The education the students would obtain in self-denial and economy would be of more value to them than all the book knowledge they could obtain. Again and again, the instruction was given that we should not imitate the schools in America. I was instructed to educate, educate, educate. We were in a new world in Australia, and the burden of the schoolwork rested largely on W.C. White and myself. We spent many sleepless nights planning for the work. We studied the field and prayed for wisdom to know how to make a beginning in the educational work and to meet the expenses of the students who should come. One morning, W.C. White came to me and said, "Mother, I have a plan I wish to lay before you." I responded, "I have a plan which I wish to lay before you. I have decided to give all the royalties on my foreign books to create a fund for the education of the students who cannot pay for themselves. Then, when these students have received their training and can earn means, they can pay back into the fund the money that was paid from it for them. Thus, there will always be a fund for the benefit of the youth who desire an education." "This is just the plan I had in mind," W.C. White answered. About this time, Elder Haskell sent us means, lending in all about $3,000. $1,000 of this, Brother Haskell said, he might need at any time, but the balance we could use in the work where it was needed. None but the Lord knows how thankful we were for this help. I praised God with heart and voice. We were then able to make a beginning. Elder Haskell's money was just what was needed.